And you are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. And this is your host, Bathrobes Pierre Robert Norris. What is our theme song going to be? Well, I've got you all fooled. We're not having a theme song this particular edition. January 24th. Are we the 24th or the 25th? Anybody know? 25th. Thank you very much. Day behind. January 25th, 2001. But hey, the date doesn't matter if your heart's in the right place and your ear is tuned to this show. 2 hours of civil rights on the streets with me and you, if you call in, 427-3772. And our special studio guest, Peter Stafford, author, humanitarian, local, and vocal local. He'll be here with us in the studio for much of the show. And he's an expert on psychedelic drugs. He's actually written... An investigator and an expert as well. You don't have to be an expert, however, to join the show. All you have to do is be a person with access to a telephone. That leaves a lot of homeless people out most of the time by this time of night. Way out. Thank you, City Council, for your sleeping ban law. But if you can get to a phone and you want to join us, please do. If you want to have some your say off air because you feel that you need a little, maybe you talk with the producer, or it's a more confidential matter, or you're not too interested in speaking on the air for one reason or another, 423-HUFF is the number to call, 423-4833. That's Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and that's the organization I work with off-air, and I would like to see lots more people working with that organization as well. Before we begin the show, however, I'm going to... we are actually beginning the show. Before we begin the actual... back and forth here in the studio and back and forth on the air, I am going to give you a taste of some recent interviews that I was able to secure. Actually, as recently as last night, I was at the Mifune get-together, extravaganza, gala. It was a deal with the Civic Auditorium. The head of the national NAACP spoke, along with a lot of other honchos and honchesses who I'd have preferred to have seen actually doing something in the community for poor people instead of just flouting 40-year-old credentials like, for example, Angela Davis does and did last night. And we had the Furess of the university, Greenwood, the chancellor, the woman, among others, responsible for the massive housing shortage in town. Thank you very much. So I was not terribly... pleased beyond belief at anything that was said at this particular meeting, but there were some interesting conversations that went on sort of in the aisles, so to speak, because there were hundreds, maybe several thousand people there. I'm not sure how many. It was a huge crowd. The place was filled up to the rafters. They actually said that it was packed and it was only standing room only and sitting room only, and it was all free, and that was good, and there was a very little authoritarian muscling of people by the security last night, which I really was pleased to see. Actually, I saw none. People were allowed to come and go as they wished. They were cautioned that, there wasn't much space inside where they could move to, and that was good. And we were restricted from having a table. Huff, for example, was not allowed to have a table inside, though there was plenty of room for tables. And we were also told to flyer outside, which, of course, I ignored. I flyered inside. But nobody seemed to object, and that was fine. We also signed people up with petitions to get people active around not just the sleeping ban, but rent control. And the recent attack on bicyclists, which is really assuming significant proportions. There was a city council resolution appropriation passed in which they're now going for 3 new bicycle cops. That's not cops on bicycles, mind you. That's cops going after bicyclists. Thank you very much. And that was opposed by the entire bicycling community, as far as I could see. But, of course, our great progressive green to the gills council, headed by Fuhrer Fitzmaurice, formerly a green, now sort of a green-yellow puce sort of fellow. I'm not sure what he does. I think he's a Republican, masquerading as a green. They turned this, they rubber-stamped this appropriation right ahead to the police department, as Chief Belcher assured them that they only had a few days to get it in. They're going to have another meeting, however, on Monday at the police station, appropriately enough, in the community room there. So you'll be able to register a few complaints, and they hope to, quote, tweak the grant that they're giving, hundreds of thousands of dollars for more cops on the streets, none of it earmarked to go to any of the local bicycle organizations that I'm aware of, a third of it supposedly going to education for bicyclists or for people who might be dealing with bicyclists. It's bad, and we're going to be playing some cuts from that. But first, let's hear a little bit of what went on. We actually ran into some interesting folks at the Civic Auditorium festivities last night. So here we go.
From 10 to 9 on January 24th, 2001, we're in the Civic Auditorium talking to
Cindy.
And Cindy, you're a UCSC senior.
Yes.
And you're here at this presentation by...
Don't even remember his name.
Yeah.
Can't pronounce it.
Good speaker. I had the same problem. I was trying to get you to pronounce it. An NAACP city-sponsored civil rights activist, head of the NAACP. He's been particularly concerned with racial outrages and abuses in the electoral process in Florida.
Yeah.
And you yourself have suffered what I would call an outrage and an abuse here in Santa Cruz. What was it, last year?
Yes, last winter.
And what happened?
I was sleeping in my van on campus, and a cop came up, noticed that I was in my van, and knocked on the door.
Oh, a student.
And
got me sleeping in her van on campus.
And
thanks for stopping, Emily. She's a council member.
Yeah, I know Emily. She sponsored me
right before.
She's wonderful.
Not in this case, she isn't. Not around the sleeping van, unfortunately, she isn't.
Well, he proceeded to tell me that it was illegal to sleep on campus in your van and gave me a ticket for it and ended up having to go to court for it and paying a fine. So.
And did he give you an alternate place to sleep?
No, he didn't. He just said that sleeping on campus was illegal. He didn't tell me anywhere that I could go. In fact, he told me that it was illegal everywhere.
Did he say there had been a complaint about you?
No. No complaint.
Did he suggest that he would send you to a safer place? You're a single woman?
No.
And where in fact, did he find you?
It was in the East Remote on campus.
In the?
East Remote parking lot.
And were you alone? Was your vehicle sort of isolated from other vehicles? Were there other vehicles there?
No, there's other vehicles around it.
Did he seem to be seeking out people who might be sleeping in their vehicles?
Yeah, he was actually waiting on campus. He was waiting in the parking lot, waiting for people to come into their cars and make sure that they left instead of staying in their vehicles. And if they didn't, he would come up and talk to you or ticket you.
But he didn't give you a warning and say, move on. He gave you a ticket.
Yeah, but I've been warned since then. It just depends on who you get, what cop you get, what kind of mood they're in, whether or not they'll ticket you.
Now, how many nights before had you been sleeping out before this happened?
Oh, for a month or two.
And had you been approached by police officers?
No.
You think that was because you hid well, or was that because they were adopting a very tolerant policy?
I think it's because I hid well.
So you were good at hiding.
Yeah, I knew some spots.
Now, you were doing this because you were just having a jolly fun experiment sleeping in your vehicle, right?
No.
Why were you sleeping in your vehicle?
Well, I didn't have any money for rent in winter quarter, and I didn't want to ask my parents for money, so I figured I might as well just sleep in a van. It's free.
So you are actually short of money?
Yes.
Could you have gotten the money to sleep, to rent? How much would it have cost you to get to sleep in either the dorms or to rent housing?
The dorms, it's probably about $600. And housing, I would imagine, you can't get anything for much cheaper than that.
What about your friends? Did your friends know you were sleeping in a vehicle?
Yeah, they knew.
And how did you do it? How did you shower?
I'd shower on the at the rec department on campus.
Did you consider yourself homeless?
No.
Because you have a family eventually you could turn to if you wanted?
Yeah.
Did your family know that you were doing this?
No.
Would you have been embarrassed had they learned?
No.
So you got a ticket from this police officer?
Yeah.
How was he when he gave it to you? Was he sort of matter of fact? Was he sort of embarrassed? Was he aggressive? How would you describe his demeanor?
Well, he explained the situation and told me why he had to do it, but he was very curt and wouldn't listen to my pleas to give me a warning and let me go. And
why wouldn't they give you a warning?
He says that he's given out many warnings and
to
we
you?
Know the, no, just people. We know the laws and that we shouldn't sleep on campus. There's reason why there's rules, is what he said.
And what was the reason?
That people cause disturbances when they sleep in their van by, you know, polluting.
Snoring too loud?
Peeing around their vans or leaving litter or things.
Did he suggest that you've been peeing and littering?
No.
Did you point out any pools of urine or old trash by the side of your vehicle?
No.
So he was making generalizations that didn't, in this case, apply to you.
I feel so, yeah.
So you got a ticket, and what happened then?
Well, I ignored it for a while, but then I got a court warrant saying that I had to come to court, and so I went, and I was fined money, and there's nothing I could really do about it. Just had to pay it.
How much was it?
$250.
That was with a failure to appear?
Yes.
How much was it? Did you know how much it was if you broke it down in terms of, was the original fine was?
No, I'm not sure. I don't remember.
Were you in a position where you were informed of your original need to do a court appearance, or did you feel that as a person who was living in a vehicle, it would have been difficult for you to know that until you actually got the warrant?
No, I have a mailbox on campus, so
you were informed of the ticket.
Yes.
So you were a very bad, vicious person for not going to court in time.
No, I actually mixed up the dates, and that's why I didn't go the first time.
Did you go before Mad Dog Mulligan, the character in the basement?
Oh, I don't know who that is.
That's the judge in the basement. There's only one judge in the basement. Did you go into a basement court?
Oh, yes, I did.
Mad Dog Mulligan, probably. Or Meat Grinder Mulligan, as we call him. He endlessly favors the police department. Did you ask for a trial? Or did you just pay the fine?
No, I just paid the fine.
How much again was it?
$250.
Say it again.
$250.
For one night of sleeping?
Yes.
Now, did this salutary slap in the face make you turn away from the evil of your sleeping ways?
No, I continue to do so.
And is this an example of just sheer malice for our authorities and our social system?
Yes, I believe so. I think that if you really don't have a home, why shouldn't you be allowed to sleep on the streets? Or at least have designated areas where we can go. It's ridiculous.
Did you know other people who slept on campus?
Yeah.
How many people would you estimate? Or how many people did you know who slept up there?
I knew of at least five people who did. I know there's got to be more than that. And if they don't sleep on campus, then they sleep in the forest behind the campus, or they sleep somewhere in town. Or
was this an economic issue, or was it just sort of a choice, an ideological choice in your mind?
For me, it was economic, but I think for others, it was just like an ideological choice not to pay rent in Santa Cruz because it's so expensive.
Are there many students who actually have these economic problems? Here's our supervisor, I mean, Marty Wormhout. She also is doing nothing to end the sleeping ban.
Great.
Good night, Marty.
Sorry, go ahead.
I forget the question.
For most students, is it economic or is it ideological? Do you have any sense, are there a lot of people who have economic problems?
I'd say it's about half and half. I know some people who have had to do it because of economic and other for ideological reasons.
So when was this again? This was in January or February last year?
Yeah, it was February last year.
And for how long after that did you continue to sleep in your vehicle?
Probably about 2 months.
Did you go to church and, get some sort of absolution for this criminal behavior?
No.
No. I understand that you're probably suffering rather severe guilt pangs even now.
No.
Not really. No. So when did you give up your life of crime? Or have you given? Are you still, in fact, engaging in this kind of disgraceful activity?
No. No, I have a place to sleep now. I gave it up when I got money to sleep in a room.
What about this sleeping ban? Is this something that should be eliminated?
I definitely think so. I think a lot of people are stuck in situations where they have no choice but to sleep on the streets, and if that's where they are, then they should be able to do that. Or we should be able to provide places so they don't have to do that.
Anything you want to add?
No.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And that was an interview last night with a UCSC student who got a $254, I'm not sure, dollar ticket for one instance of sleeping in her vehicle up on campus at UCSC. That's the sleeping ban, which not only is a city crime, that is to say, it's a crime that the city is enforcing, this kind of institutional hate crime on homeless people, but it's also a crime for people at the University of California to do that as well under a copycat law, which is actually a little bit worse than the city's sleeping ban. Half the campus, for those nitpicking attorney types, is within the city's actual city limits, and half is outside the city limits. So the campus has a kind of its own broad law that I think you can't even be in a vehicle after dark without getting, if you're inhabiting or habitating a vehicle. Actually, I've got to bring in the exact words of the code, but it's worse than the city's law, which is pretty bad. The city's law is actually, we thought, was one of the worst in the state, but trust the university to come up with something just a little bit worse than the city. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Call-in number here, should you wish to give us some thoughts, is 427-3772. With me in the studio is Peter Stafford, who's reviewing his notes, and I'm reviewing his own writing. This man is a prolific writer. We're going to be talking to him shortly. Actually, we may stall him again, because I'm kind of trying to get things together here so that we can have as coherent, concise, and compact a show as we can get you. A couple things are happening tonight I want to encourage you to consider looking in on if you get bored with this show or if you have higher priorities. Club Cruise, Community Television's half-hour twice weekly rebroadcast tonight, is an interesting show to watch if you have access to Community TV Channel 27. Tonight is the Coffee Klatch 3 on Becky Johnson's Club Cruise, and I'll be hosting at 7 o'clock. That is was recorded a couple weeks ago, but it's all about the City Council's, through Mayor Tim Fitzmaurice's, barring of homeless activists from the City Council offices for peaceful lobbying. The pretext for this was that we were harassing Anna Brooks, the administrative aide there, who was able to get free city legal assistance. City police delivered her restraining order. We were barred from 50 yards from the City Council offices, and still are, with the exception of public meetings and business visits to public offices, as well as we are now allowed to use, get this, the public library and the civic auditorium. Thank you very much. We're going back to court on January 31st in hopes of getting a judge to say, hold it, this is a slap suit. That is to say, a strategic lawsuit against public participation, a politically motivated lawsuit designed to chill us from the legitimate exercise of our First Amendment rights, which it obviously is. Whether we can get Judge Stevens to say this, of course, given the incestuous nature of local judges and local politicians, I wouldn't put a lot of money on this one, folks. But the arguments are good, and Fitzmaurice's record of, I described him as Emperor Fitzmaurice in a recent flyer, but his behavior at the City Council is beginning to look more like Führer Fitzmaurice. And I don't say this because I think he has any hostility toward Jews. He just has a willingness to use fascistic tactics, you might say, or maybe if you want to be gentler, authoritarian tactics regarding critics at City Council, such as he favors those who he likes get put to the head of the line on the speaker's line. Those he don't that he doesn't like don't get to speak at all unless they want to wait until the very end of the meeting. That's the dilemma that Becky Johnson and I faced when we went back to our first City Council meeting, which was a special meeting considering City Council Commission appointments, and we wanted to talk about the rubber-stamped reappointees that actually eventually did get reappointed. Tony, no policeman can ever be wrong, Guerrero, Kennedy's original appointee, and I guess he was reappointed. I'm not sure. Probably Kennedy reappointed him again. I guess Hernandez initially appointed him. And then there's Jim, don't consult the American Bar Association because you'll be rather shocked at what you find, King, who reportedly has numerous complaints with the ABA and has shown hostility toward homeless people locally, even though I understand he's associated with the Homeless Services Center now. He's the Catherine Byers crony that's currently sitting on the Citizens Police Review Board and voting for the police department's position. At least I've seen it in a number of open votes. I don't know how they vote behind closed doors on actual review of specific complaints, because they don't tell us. It's not that they're barred from law by telling us. They aren't. They just choose not to let us know who votes to sustain the complaint and who votes to dump it. And that's, I think, another example of their lack of accountability, which, of course, we've become so familiar with at the City Council. And we saw that so graphically demonstrated at the last Tuesday City Council meeting in a number of cases, which actually we're probably going to begin with right now. But first I want to introduce my guest so he doesn't feel completely left out. Let's see if we got your mic. Whoops, see if we got your mic, if we can get it working here. Hang on, let's see if we can get this. You got to kind of nuzzle up to it. Okay. There. And say hello.
Hello.
There you go.
How
so
are you?
Introduce yourself. Your name is?
Peter Stafford.
And Peter, you're...
PI. That stands for Psychedelics Investigator.
Gotcha. And how long have you been investigating them psychedelics?
Well over a third of a century.
And what kind of books have you written on the subjects, Peter?
Well, five that have been published.
Uh-huh. Your latest work was?
Psychedelics Encyclopedia, which is in its third edition. I completely rewrote it the second time, and then I added 90 pages the third time because I felt that every 6 or 8 years the data had doubled.
You mean in spite of the criminalization of even research into LSD and other psychedelics, researchers are continuing to amass new information?
Oh, certainly.
Is this happening mostly in the U.S. or mostly abroad?
Both.
And how do they do this? I mean, how can we be sure that the kinds of research we're getting are valid, considering this is all being done, I presume it's all being done underground, right?
Well, now some of it actually is legal.
Really?
Yeah.
And what
with MDMA and LSD, mm-hmm. and also marijuana.
Well, I've heard that kind of...
Enormous amounts of money have been invested in this, but... there actually are beginning to be some actual studies under government auspices.
Right. But certainly not enough.
When I wrote my first book.
But not enough to indicate that there's doubling of the material every. I mean, these are rather scanty studies, right?
No.
So most of your work is coming from underground.
Now, the latest volume is a little bit over 500 pages.
Your psychedelic encyclopedia.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And it involves, it's a discussion of 9 families mm-hmm. of psychedelics.
What are those 9 families?
We'll
see if he knows his stuff, folks.
Okay. LSD, mescaline, and San Pedro. Along with peyote, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Psilocybin, mm-hmm. MDMA,
mm-hmm.
DMT, another short-acting...
Psychedelics,
mm-hmm. yeah. No, tryptamines, actually.
Mm-hmm. Tryptamines.
Yahe, ayahuasca.
Yahe and ayahuasca, two different families or one?
No, those are different names for the same thing.
Uh-huh.
Let's see, what do we got here? Amanita muscaria.
Is there a more common name that is known by, too?
Fly agaric.
Fly agaric, which is Spanish fly.
No.
No, it's not. That's not Spanish fly.
No.
What is it?
It's the little mushroom that you see in all kinds of cards, and it's all over the place.
Is it similar to psilocybin?
It has completely different things in it, but it is the red-capped mushroom that has little white dots all over it.
Now, the Psychedelic Encyclopedia, we're talking to Peter Stafford, local PI, psychedelic investigator, is available in the library? You actually work in the library.
You can actually buy it. You can buy it from me.
So if you want to get...
You get $10 off. $20 off if you want.
Really? Here's your opportunity if you haven't got this book for your library. And how many pages is this book?
A little over 500.
And is it something that's accessible to the lay person, or is it something you need to...
Oh, yeah. In each case, I've discussed the history, the botany, the physical effects, the mental effects, and forms, sources, and preparations. It's like
sort of a primer on each of these?
Yeah.
Of course, you don't give where you can buy these forbidden pharmaceuticals.
No, I don't think I've...
Well, you know, let me just sort of shift gears here from the, you know, from that to... But let me first of all say, if you want to be reached, if you out there want to get a hold of Peter Stafford and perhaps purchase a copy of his book, or maybe look at it, I don't know. Is available in the library to look at. It's called the Psychedelic Encyclopedia.
It was called Ready Reference.
So it's a reference volume in the library.
Yeah, that's the thing that they look at when people call in to find out.
I see.
But
so
it's also in reference and it's also available.
Uh huh. And you can and they can be bought from you as well. And how can people get in touch with you?
It can also be bought from Logos or.
Mm-hmm. Borders, shops. If you're so inclined, though I myself have not yet purchased a volume at Borders, I'd like to say.
I haven't checked that one.
Nor from Bookshop Santa Cruz, I might add.
But there are a number of places.
But what about from you? Now, is there a number people can call you at? Would you like to give out a number where they can be reached?
Sure.
You at?
I live at 203 Lighthouse Avenue in Santa Cruz, 95060. My phone number is 427-2607. I can be emailed at hotmail.com.
And what's your email address? If you don't have it with you, you can always, folks out there, give a call to 423-HUFF and leave your name and number, and I'll get in contact with Peter, and he can possibly pass it on to me.
But also, I have a great amount of information from a fellow named Tom Roberts, who has taught several courses at Northwestern University about psychedelics.
Well, I know you were
prepared. I kept all of his stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see, if you call up hotmail.com,
Well, the getting this additional information, I think, is also, you know, something people can get through giving a call to the HUFF line, 423-HUFF, and I'll pass it on once I get more, you know, if people call in, I'll pass it on to you, and you can instruct them more directly. Psychedelics in Santa Cruz, you don't read much about them in the paper. It's the heroin busts, I guess crack isn't big anymore, marijuana busts. What's the status of psychedelics in Santa Cruz? Are you in touch with the pulse of the street there, Peter?
Well, to a certain extent, but I probably have a better appreciation of the acid that is on the street because I've written these books.
Uh-huh. And
so that...
Appreciation in the sense of...
So that what I have, say, like, taken
mm-hmm.
is probably a bit purer than is on the streets.
Mm-hmm. Well... You know, you can't really know what's being sold where and when. I mean, it's such a, you know, an underground market. That's one of, the whole problems of this criminalization scene. There's no way to deal with purity. There's no way to be sure you're getting what you
right.
need and what you don't need.
I can say that with one exception,
uh-huh.
everything I've been given recently, was excellent.
What's the latest fashion in psychedelics, or what? Let's put it this way: what is fashion perhaps isn't the word. What are people taking most of? What's happening on the streets in your view? Or what have you noticed? Or are you in a position to answer that question?
I'm not sure, but I would want to point out a book called Tripping.
Tripping?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's by a fellow named Charles Hayes.
Charles Hayes, recently written?
Yes, it just came out.
Uh-huh.
And it's got 50 accounts of fairly extreme trips.
LSD.
LC and many other things.
Huh.
But he is a world traveler,
mm-hmm.
and there is an excellent description in an interview at the end with Terence McKenna of DMT, the best account of DMT, dimethyltryptamine, which is an astonishing...
DMT is a short-acting kind of LSD-like substance. It used to be smoked, and then...
It has to be smoked.
Has to be smoked.
And,
I don't think I've ever had DMT.
It is so astonishing. Humphrey Osmond, who gave us the word psychedelic...
And you also as a researcher...
Which means soul arousing.
Mm-hmm.
It,
soul revealing?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
He was given some early on, and he lay down for about 5 minutes. This is a very short-acting thing. And finally he leaned up and he said... My word!
Right.
It is probably the most astonishing
It's expensive, or how, what's...
It's almost unavailable.
Uh-huh.
That's the problem.
Right. I mean, what's... you don't, I take it you don't see much in the cards in terms of potential legalization of the psychedelics.
No, Barry McCaffrey is leaving, and...
You got some clown coming in. Yeah.
The Clinton administration has been... Or Clinton, or whatever, has been very disappointing in this regard.
Yeah, tell
After
me.
After he got the hit on the gays in the military and so forth, it just was impossible. And there's absolutely no reason to think that they're going to be more favorable.
Right.
I mean, if at this point, the abortion drug, you are...
Are you 46?
Are you...
Uh-huh.
That had been acknowledged
as fairly safe.
It's fairly safe, and they want to
examine it for safety. Yeah, I mean, I think it's a political agenda, or a religious agenda, perhaps.
Right. So we've had this situation where everything had to be underground, and no doubt it's going to be somewhat worse. And yet, what has happened is that the psychedelics have turned out to be a winner. It turns out, let's see, the latest almanacs say that the last class of college seniors, 12.4% of them have used LSD.
Now, you know, is this sort of, I hear this distinction between recreational use and, let's say, serious spiritual use. Is this some sort of phony, baloney, bogus academic distinction, or is it a meaningful distinction that we should be aware of, that, you know, people popping LSD just sort of to have a weekend release, like to have a drink of booze,
or a big difference between the two.
Right. Now, that's what, but I mean, what in terms of serious use, what percentage of that youth use is serious in your view? Like, you know,
I'm pretty impressed with people I've talked to.
You've talked to young people in the community here?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Like in the 60s, something like 250 mics was considered a reasonable amount.
250 micrograms of LSD?
Yeah, that's 250 millionths of a gram.
Pretty small quantity produces a pretty big impact.
Yeah, that is 4,000 doses per gram. We're talking about probably the most powerful molecule as far as mind change.
Right. Now, given that power...
But if you take a lesser amount...
Right.
...you get a very different qualitative effect.
Uh-huh.
As it actually happens, when you take a larger amount, you get spun out. And most people don't have any problems. If you take a smaller amount, strangely enough, people find difficulty because they're both in one world and the other world.
So less is more, in this case, or less
no,
is more intense.
Less tends to bring up more difficulties.
In the sense of you're both here and there instead of just being there.
Yeah.
Yeah. But again, getting back to the youth. And my question to you is, are these just, you know, wild kids having a crazy thrill on the weekends, or is this a serious researcher sitting down to engage in a religious experience? If you'll forgive that kind of...
Well, obviously it's both.
Right, but I mean, in terms of the percentages...
I mean, there are a lot of people who are drawn to it as a party drug.
Right.
And there are a lot of people who have been taken with the idea of psychedelic, that it is soul-revealing.
Uh-huh.
And the important thing for those people...
Right.
...is to set aside a fair amount of time...
Right.
...at least a day...
Mm-hmm.
...to deal with these things that come up that are often really astonishing.
Now, are you, speaking as a potential guide here, if you will, Would you suggest to people who have not taken LSD recently, or let's say who have never taken LSD and want to take LSD or some other psychedelic, that they do this in the company of someone else? Is it a bad idea to do it alone?
Yes, it should certainly be done with somebody else, somebody that you can trust.
Right.
What happens is that one becomes extremely vulnerable.
Right.
As some absolutely astonishing things happen to you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking particularly about large amounts. I mean, like that guy said, my word. Well, there are
now in your
an
book
enormous
in your
number of people who have done that. This book I was talking about tripping.
Yes.
There's a woman who said that she didn't believe that people who were involved in all kinds of technology had really taken LSD or some strong psychedelic. So she went around and she asked actually 100 people, and 97% of them, 97 out of the 100, said it had affected their work.
Personally taking these drugs?
Yes. In terms of what they had done in with technology.
And this is
so
a book.
There is this enormous rippling effect.
This is a book, Tripping, that could be found in the library, or is it not available?
Oh, yeah, it just came out.
And the name of the author is?
Charles Hayes.
And you have a website, Peter, that people can reach. What is the address of that website?
Okay, let's see. geocities.com/psychedelics101/index.html. ML.
And if you missed that, give a call to 423-HUFF, leave your name and number, and I will get it back to you. We're talking to Peter Stafford here on Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3. Peter is the author
It's Geocities. Psychedelics 101, that's one word.
Right, right. It's hard to do verbally. You have to actually see it. But if you give a call, definitely we can get the website to you. And also the Psychedelic Encyclopedia is in the library, public library, in the reference section.
It is said to be, by some librarians, the most stolen book they ever had.
So don't steal that book. Read that book. But buy that book from Peter Stafford and give a call to 423-HUFF or to his number, which is
427-2607.
427-2607, if you'd like to get a copy yourself.
You wanted to talk a little bit about medical marijuana.
I do want to talk about medical marijuana, but I'm going to do a couple other things first, Peter, and I also want to let people know that if they want to get in touch with you, if they have any questions about any of these psychedelics or about anything at all, hey, we know the answers here. Give a call to Free Radio Santa Cruz. You're on the air here, 96.3 FM, and the phone number is 427-3772. I've got a bunch of catching up to do, and I'm probably not going to be able to do it all tonight. I'm hoping to hear Scott Graham, who's often on this show, call in and talk about the PG&E ripoff. He was going to give us a brief kind of discussion of that. Hope the equipment doesn't blow up on me. I'm getting some strange sounds from that equipment. At the Tuesday City Council meeting, there was a lot of concern by bicyclists, as I've mentioned before, about the city council's rubber stamping of the police grant for more cops to ticket bicyclists instead of more real education on this issue. And I actually got some interesting tape from the oral communications section of the whole discussion of whether to wait on this bike grant. The deal with more cops is you get federal money the first year. It pays for the cops. The second year, you only get half as much. And the third year, the city has to keep paying for police chief Belcher's blue shirts, as I call them, the local police officers. And it's not that this society doesn't necessarily need police. So that's a whole different discussion. But we certainly don't need a blank check and a rubber stamp for the police department, particularly if we don't want to have a police state. I mean, It's not that police officers are people of bad will. It's just they have a particular way of doing things, and the police department has a particular philosophy. And it depends on whether you want to, if you want to run a society along those lines. I can you know, suggest a number of societies you might want to go visit, starting with the People's Republic of China, ranging to a lot of Latin American dictatorships. And there are a couple, I'm sure, in Africa and the Middle East that you'll also enjoy. But I personally would like to see a different kind of society here, and I would like to see a society that considers the priorities of poor people and the priorities of ordinary citizens instead of, as often happens in police states, the priorities of the ruling class, whoever it happens to be, and in a rather strong and virulent way. So this council meeting was rather interesting because bicyclists were given the boot, as I mentioned, when I actually came back in the evening and talked about it at the public comment period generally. But I also met some of the bicyclists, particularly the victim of the near hit and run, as I heard it, that happened on Saturday at the Bush protest downtown near the town clock, near the post office. As you may recall, for those of you who tuned in on Sunday, we played some tape, which I just happened to get, of an interview with the fellow in the truck who hit the bicycle and the bicyclist. And there was also a long story in the Metro, this last Wednesday's Metro, about how the police essentially did nothing about this. In fact, seemed to be reluctant to take interviews, and to the general outrage of the bicycle community. And I've got some of that discussion about that on City Council. What I don't have, however, are... And I hope you are listening out there, if anybody is listening who followed that issue on Sunday, and then on Saturday, of course. My Sunday show is from 11 to 1:30 in the afternoon. That's when I played the interviews I had, the remains of the interviews. I had a dying tape recorder, which I have been able to replace, at least for the moment. So hopefully we've got some better interviews coming up. But I wasn't able to secure the phone numbers of the folks I talked to who were came to the city council meeting in the afternoon and evening. And if you have things you want to say on the air, like if you got statements to make about what happened on Saturday at that bicycle accident, I should say the hit and run accident. I'm going to call it it's a question. A lot of people didn't think it was an accident. They thought that the motorist was responsible for. Some of them thought it was, attempted murder. I mean, that phrase was bandied about by some.
Did you see in this morning's paper that there was some guy who went and shot, two guys went and shot this guy because he had, they kept banging their horns because it was a very long wait for the light.
Oh, is this local or is this out of town?
It was in this morning's paper.
Right, but was it out of town?
It was out of town.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
At any rate,
yeah,
two
road
of them
rage.
Jumped out and they went and shot
right,
guy.
Road
killed
rage.
Him.
Oh, I hear you. You know, I mean, road rage was how folks described the situation locally. And I'm not really commenting on the road rage. I'm commenting on the police response under Sergeant Butchie Baker, who apparently, to the consternation of many, didn't arrest the guy. And also wouldn't take, apparently, police reports on the issue. And I'm familiar with Baker's failures on this matter because 3 weeks ago he refused to take a complaint of mine against Mayor Tim Fitzmaurice. Fitzmaurice, for those of you who may remember, is the former Green Party member who apparently, under false pretenses, got elected as mayor by claiming he was going to follow the Green Party platform to the Greens. And when he got into power, of course, he joined Catherine Byers in the reactionary bloc that has kept in power the sleeping ban and numerous other, the current police situation, the failure to have meaningful community control of police, we can also lay not so much just to the doorstep of Tim Fitzmaurice, but certainly he makes up that majority, which, as we saw at the last city council meeting, rubber stamps new cops that will be giving out tickets for police, another $112,000 overrun for the police station, making what, $5.5 million over the $7 million original estimates. You'll be able to hear it later in the show, the city manager do his little toe dance, his little ballet around this issue, and the city council try to talk it all away, but I think it's quite clear that it can't be talked away. What I'm saying is, if any bicyclists out there want to call in, there's supposed to be a final say goodbye to your rights meeting to the city council on Monday at the community room of the police station, and I'm not sure what time. Everybody knows that time. I'll try to have it on Sunday, my Sunday show, which, as I said, is 11 to 1:30. And if you had anything that you saw happen on Saturday or any thoughts you've had about the media coverage or the police response, please give a call to 427-3772. What I'm going to do now is I'm going to try to read my own writing on this tape. Yes, there we go. I was able to read that. I'm going to play you a bit of the testimony about from the bicycle community about why or why not the city should throw three more cops on the streets to go after bicyclists. And here's that discussion or some of it.
We need to get to public comment. Are there any other points? Since there's at least 10 people that want to speak, according to the cards I've gotten, I'm going to put a three-minute limit on it and ask people to be to the point. This is about whether... Well, I also want to point out to the people that came for the 4:30 session that we're obviously going to be more than half an hour getting through this last item, so I'm sorry if you're early for that item. So, any members of the public that would like to speak to this item, please come forward.
Shall I begin?
Yes, please begin.
Hi, my name's Sean Duncan. I'm a technical systems administrator at the UC campus. I was also involved in a collision between myself and a motor vehicle on Saturday. There's a lot of speculations about the motives about the driver, but I think in talking about the issues of bicycle safety and where that money should be spent and who should be receiving that, we really need to take a look at my case. There will be a full article in the Metro tomorrow. Basically, no charges have been pressed against the driver. I myself do feel it was malicious, and I would just like to say that I'm here, and I will provide any information to help you make this decision. And I think it's important that I be involved in this. I'm not a political person. This is my first council meeting ever, so needless to say, I'm a little nervous and collected as possible. But like I said, I just wanted to let you know where I was coming from, and well, I do think we need to... I'm sorry.
No, please finish.
I do think we need to consider giving this much money to the Santa Cruz Police Department while looking at how my case is being handled. I mean, it's essentially up to me now to go out and find the eyewitnesses that were at the scene, get their statements that say that, yes, this did occur the way that I feel it occurred, and then the case may be up for review. As of now, it's basically labeled my fault, and it's a closed matter, and I'm not happy with that at all. I'm here to say that.
Well, we appreciate the fact that you're apparently okay. You're okay. We're glad to see that. We're not really discussing your specific case, although it's certainly related to bicycle safety. And we're glad that you came forward to talk with us, and we'd like to talk to you about your case and those matters anytime. But I don't know the details of the investigation of your case.
Check the Metro tomorrow.
That's great. I've read a lot of emails about it.
Okay.
I probably have most of the Metro. I just don't mean I don't have the details from the police officer's point of view. So.
And any information that I could give, or if anyone would like to talk to me offline about this, I'm with.
Yeah, I've got your phone number, actually, and so I'll be sure to supply that to any council member that
wants. That's fantastic.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for the time.
Next speaker, please.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, my name is Dee Clark. I'm a UCSC employee and a local cyclist. And while I feel that the precise details of Sean's case are, in fact, not relevant to this discussion, I think that the coincidence in time of this incident and this grant being applied for is unfortunate. There are two issues which I'd like to raise with regard to the grant. One is that I'm surprised that the grant, which is a major initiative involving major funding, has come as a bit of a startlement to several bike and pedestrian advocates I know who would normally expect to be informed or consulted on a project of this magnitude. So I think I understand this is a rotten time of year for processing grant applications, especially on a 40-day time scale, but anything that we can do to get additional public input, especially from the community of cyclists and pedestrians who are going to be affected by this, I think will be effort well spent before that deadline comes up. The second thing that I would like to say is that and I can provide URLs and references on this if there's further discussion. There is a pattern both nationally and internationally that has come up for official concern and discussion, and that is a pattern of persistent bias against pedestrians and cyclists in cases where there is a collision between a motorist and a pedestrian or a cyclist. This matter has actually been discussed in the United Kingdom House of Commons. It is a subject for newspaper articles and so forth. And I think that when we talk about a bike and pedestrian safety program, one thing that we need to consider is whether this bias is present in our own community. And I think it is in every community, because this is a car-centered country. And what we can do to ensure that effective and appropriate sanctions are taken against motorists who drive irresponsibly and who endanger people's lives, so that, in fact, there is not a perception of uneven application of the vehicle code. And I think I would like to see, when we review this grant and think about approving it, I would definitely like to see this issue taken into consideration when the grant is reviewed. And I'll be brief. Thank you.
We have a question, though. Mr. Porter.
I just wanted to ask you, it seems like, from what Sean said and what you said, there might be an implication that in addition to enforcement and education, that maybe another component might be further investigation of an accident of this sort, and that that might be equal in priority, for example, to enforcement or similar to education in terms of following up on what really causes these automobile bicycle types of accidents.
I think that this incident has had a serious negative public relations impact, and I think that specifically a further investigation of this incident would be a very good idea, but I think that a policy of fully investigating such incidents rather than simply dismissing them as trivial would be a good policy to pursue, because am I running out of time?
You're answering a question, that's fine.
No time.
If I may waste a few more seconds of your time, I have read, and I believe from my own understanding of basic physics, that an impact with an automobile driven at 30 miles an hour is equivalent in destructive force to a shotgun blast. And so when I think about drivers on the streets and I think about pedestrians and bicycles on the streets, I think a great deal about a number of people driving around in deadly weapons. And I think that we should take as seriously irresponsible or careless behavior with an automobile. I think we should take that the same way we should take someone waving a shotgun around. If someone were to fire at another citizen with a shotgun in a fit of temper and mostly miss them but slightly injure them, my feeling is that that person would be face down on the asphalt being handcuffed in a jiffy. And this is, you know, perhaps an extreme metaphor, but I think the killing power of automobiles is enormous, especially to a person like a cyclist or pedestrian who is not themselves inside a car. And that we need to take very, very seriously incidents in which a car collides with an automobile, with a pedestrian or a cyclist, and not regard that as normal or everyday or always the pedestrian's or cyclist's fault. So, I'm sorry, that was not a prepared speech.
That's fine. Thank you very much. Next speaker, please.
Hi. My name is Jason. 34, I've never owned a car. I commute on bike exclusively. I've been mostly been with Peddlers Express for the last 3 months. So I do a lot of riding. I commuted from Soquel, rain or shine, dark. So I have a lot of experience in this matter. My concern in regards to the grant is just how the money's going to be spent. It kind of seems to me like the perception is it's always the cyclist's fault, always the pedestrian's fault. You know, why not money to educate drivers to drive more carefully? And also, I'm a little concerned as to the qualifications of just having... I mean, who's going to be giving these safety lectures? I mean, is it going to be somebody who just rides a bike recreationally on the weekends, or is it going to be someone who rides in heavy traffic every day and uses a bike as a means of transportation? I'm not saying that there aren't pedestrians or cyclists who couldn't benefit from some education, although I believe that a lot of it has to do with just outright skill. I mean, there have been many times, in the 14 years I've lived here, I've never been in an accident, but I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that it was really close, where I've seen drivers, and due to my own skill, I was able to avoid a collision. So that's the concern I have about this grant is, you know, is it going to be well spent to really address the issue of bicycle and pedestrian safety? Thanks.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
Good afternoon, I'm Scott Graham. Part of the concern I have with this grant, I'm all in favor of the educational aspects of this grant, but the actually creating more police officers through the grants was something that I believe the council in their last budget cycle directed the chief of police not to do, was hire officers through these grant programs, which eventually evaporate and the city gets stuck with the entire cost of the new officers. But primarily what I have a problem with is on page 22-2, it says on the very bottom of the page, number 4, conduct proactive enforcement of laws and ordinances pertaining to bicycle operation and pedestrians. Nowhere in here does it say anything about going after cars. I ride my bike all the time. There's constantly cars driving in the bike lanes. There's constantly cars harassing bicycle riders, seeing how close they can come to them. Today on my way here, I had a guy swerve over and go through a puddle so he could splash me. To me, the money would be much better spent going after the automobile drivers. Going after the bicycle riders, if we do this fairly, say on SoCal Avenue, if you've got 1,000 cars going down there an hour and 7 bicyclists, and you give half the tickets to cars and half to bicyclists, that's not fair. It's like, you got to do it proportionally. So, and the other problem I have is that with the laws that we currently have pertaining to bicycles are totally unreasonable. Bicycles should have a separate set of laws from motor vehicles. In Europe, in many countries, Holland, Germany, France, they have completely different sets of rules for bicycles than they do for automobiles. We couldn't expect a pedestrian to obey all traffic laws like we do a car. And a bicycle is somewhere between a motor vehicle and a pedestrian. So there should be separate laws. Like, one of the things that they do differently in Europe is at traffic lights, there'll be a smaller set of lights for bicycles that has a little bicycle on the light, and that changes sooner so the bicycles can get through the traffic light and get going before the cars take off, because most of the pollution from the car exhaust comes out in that first 15 or 20 seconds when they're accelerating. So I'd like to see a real comprehensive look at what laws are applicable to bicycles and how they should be enforced, and what laws that apply to cars don't need to be applied to bicycles, and how that can be applied here in this case before we start enforcing laws on bicycles that don't make sense. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
Hi, my name is Don Fong, and I'd like to ask you to table the SCPB grant. I'm speaking only about the SCPB grant, not the Public Works grant. I'd like to ask you to table it until there's been a full consultation with the SCCRTC bike subcommittee or bike committee. One of the goals of the program or this grant proposal is supposedly to increase participation of community groups, and I'd like to submit that that consultation should have happened earlier than this point. There's a widespread concern among the bicycle community about bias or uneven enforcement of the laws against bicyclists, and I think that Sean Duncan's case is very relevant to this grant, because it shows quite clearly that there's that the Santa Cruz Police Department is not handling these incidents correctly. So I'd like this grant proposal to be put aside until there's been a chance for more input from the bicycling community, especially the SCCRTC bike committee. I'm not a member of the committee, so it's just as a member of the public, I think that it's proper for them to be consulted on something like this first. Thanks.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Council members. My name is Piet Cannon. I'm the Program Director of Bike to Work Day. I'm also the coordinator and trainer for bike safety classes for our electric bike incentive program. I'm also a member of the Community Traffic Safety Coalition. And I'm here to say that it's good to see that the Santa Cruz City Police Department and Public Works is addressing this issue of bicycle and pedestrian safety in the city of Santa Cruz. It's a problem in the city, and it's a problem throughout the county of Santa Cruz. I know that traffic sergeant. Bailey has been a member of the Community Traffic Safety Coalition also, and for many years, and has involved those issues. I also, as some of the speakers before me have said, have some concerns, and I think that, what was brought up today by the speakers made some really relevant points, and it's good to hear them being discussed in this forum. And one of the things I'd like to look at is in terms of the coordination and consultation with the many bike groups in Santa Cruz, that they look towards the many experts and people who have dedicated their time and energy towards these issues, that they be consulted and coordinated with. And then also, I too, as many speakers before me have expressed, have a concern about the equal enforcement, because it's a component of their grant for making this city safer for pedestrians and cyclists, and that is in terms of if the problems, if people at fault have been identified as a one-third split, then let's see a one-third enforcement. So I, you know, as someone already read part of the grant that says it seems like the enforcement is based on enforcing it for cyclists and pedestrians, and let's see the enforcement for motorists also, because that is a major concern for increasing bicycle use and also pedestrian use in the city of Santa Cruz. And then, and then to coordinate specifically with, as Mayor Ms. Morris already said, coordinate with the Community Traffic Safety Coalition and their effort throughout the county to make this a worthwhile effort. I do want to add also, I do have experience with the Safe Moves organization. Last spring, the Bicycle Trip hired them to put on an event for a Bike Week event last spring, and I think they are very effective. Educational tool. I was impressed by them, and it'd be good to have the coordination of this outside group, but also to make sure that, you know, this large amount of money for them, $160,000 plus for 2 years, be looked at kind of integrating what the local resources are and not duplicating local resources with that kind of input from an outside group. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Ron Goodman. I also want to express some discontent with the lack of involvement of community organizations. People Power is an advocacy group that's been in Santa Cruz for 10 years, and we weren't contacted about it. And of course, we have a lot of input on this type of subject. We have connections with groups throughout the 50 United States, as well as many other nations, and are aware of what a lot of organizations are doing with safety programs, and would have wanted to have been able to give some input on what should happen here. I have some specific thoughts because for the past 9 years I've been the treasurer for People Power, so I know also a little bit about how much money some of these things cost. So I looked at the $401,000 for the two officers and tried to convert that to what People Power would have done with $401,000. So we could hire for 2 years 15 community cycle patrol officers to visit schools, do street theater, operate daily education booths, and to coordinate a program. We could provide, additionally, with that money, 5,000 free headlights for bicyclists. And there was just enough money left over to hire one person to go and educate police officers about what it's like to ride on Santa Cruz City streets. I'm not saying that to be nasty. I think that it's really hard to enforce bicycle laws when you're not familiar with what it's like. I think it can be more difficult to teach. It's one thing to teach people that they have to follow the same rules and regulations as an automobile driver. It's another thing to explain to somebody that when you're riding on Soquel and the bike lane ends, what are you supposed to do? Those are the kinds of things that bicyclists have to face in this city. And it requires somebody with more like the experience of one of the previous speakers who says that he's been riding for PedEx professionally. Additionally, this is $47,000 for a laptop, a motorcycle.
And you're listening to the discussion of a proposed and passed, $300,000 to $400,000 grant for the police department, initially from federal sources, but to be taken over entirely by the city within 2 years, in the wake of Sergeant Butchie Baker's dismissing of many concerns in the Joe Gutierrez's hitting of Sean. And what is his last name? Starts with a C. Happened on Saturday. And this happened, this recent appropriation, which brought out a lot of bicyclists who are concerned that it's just more money to essentially harass bicyclists without any fair and proportionate concern about how motor vehicles are treated, or an expansion of how of the rules so that bicyclists can be more fairly dealt with, or just even in so elementary a case as this, where a bicyclist was hit by a truck and then just drives away later with no charges, no arrest, might have gotten a citation, it's not clear. Again, all this apparently under the aegis of Sergeant Butchie Baker, who the day before gave a ticket to a female bicyclist named Jen Curry, by the report I got by phone from two sources, and then, according to two witnesses, either slapped her or shook her up, threw her in the car, and arrested her for resisting arrest. Again, the crime was driving the wrong way on Pacific Avenue on a bicycle, which cops routinely stop bicyclists for. They write out tickets like it's going out of style doing that. And the idea that it's some sort of significant traffic hazard has never really persuaded me, although I've heard some of the arguments for it. It looks to me more like a discriminatory, either a fundraising mechanism or else just some sort of discriminatory process against bicyclists downtown. It doesn't look good to me. Which is one of the reasons that I grabbed this tape, and now I'm going to play some more of this debate at City Council. A futile presentation, although almost every single speaker said, hold off on this damn grant. And we were told that we had a progressive City Council. You know, now we're supposed to wait till 2000 to get the wonderful Ed Porter and the fine Emily Riley, who now will get this great 5-2 majority, at least, with a Crone, Fitzmaurice, and Sugar, so we can actually sack some of these clowns, like the city manager and the police chief and the city attorney, who have been essentially imposing their agenda on the city. But no, these people haven't even got the guts to stand up to one police department appropriation. When Chief Belcher claps his hands, the city council wonders how high they should jump. That's what happened on Tuesday. And while it's true that they said they're going to try to tweak the grant in a meeting on Monday, there was no serious discussion about putting this whole thing, saying to the police chief, hold it. You came to us late. You just fucked up on two bicycle matters, Friday and Saturday. The ticket, the same sergeant. We want to know what's going on here first. We're gonna kind of pause before we throw more money at you. Less to give the impression to our biking community that your policies are being endorsed. Of course, they're not saying that. They're saying the opposite. They are endorsing police department policies. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and your call-in number, should you wish to do so, is 427-3772. Let's hear a bit more of the city council. There may be a little duplication of this tape as the tapes are made this way.
That they look towards the many experts and people who have dedicated their time and energy towards these issues, that they be consulted and coordinated with. And then also, I too, as many speakers before me have expressed, have a concern about the equal enforcement, because it's a component of their grant for making this city safer for pedestrians and cyclists, and that is in terms of if the problems people at fault have been identified as a one-third split, then let's see a one-third enforcement. So as someone already read part of the grant, it says it seems like the enforcement is based on enforcing it for cyclists and pedestrians, and let's see the enforcement for motorists also, because that is a major concern for increasing bicycle use and also pedestrian use in the city of Santa Cruz. And then to coordinate specifically with, as Mayor Morris already said, coordinate with the Community Traffic Safety Coalition and their effort throughout the county to make this a worthwhile effort. I do want to add also, I do have experience with the Safe Moves organization. Last spring, the Bicycle Trip hired them to put on an event for a Bike Week event last spring, and I think they are a very effective educational tool. I was impressed by them, and it'd be good to have the coordination of this outside group, but also to make sure that, this large amount of money for them, $160,000 plus for 2 years, be looked at kind of integrating what the local resources are and not duplicating local resources with that kind of input from a an outside group. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Ron Goodman. I also want to express some discontent with the lack of involvement of community organizations. People Power is an advocacy group that's been in San.
And actually, I apologize, we are listening to a bit of what we heard before on the air, and I'm going to talk through Ron Goodman's discussion, since we have heard it before. Remind you that not only at this moment is there a community TV show, Club Cruise, which talks about the City Council Coffee Clatch, and I encourage people to go have a look at that on Channel 27. If you've got community TV, you can catch the last 15 minutes of that. You can also wander on down to a Wired Wash Cafe tonight. And Wired Wash Cafe is having a meeting of an Art and Revolution subcommittee concerned with homeless events and another kind of homeless skit coming up. I hope we're not getting buzzed out here. I'm hearing some buzzing in the studio. I don't know what that's all about. So that's happening down at Wired Wash Cafe. Started at 7, Subcommittee for Art and Revolution. You have to hustle on down there. And if you take a bike, watch out for those not only motorists, not only pedestrians, but the ever-present police officers. That seems to be, you know, the trend of the future here. Let's hear a little bit more of this discussion.
When you're riding on Soquel and the bike lane ends, what are you supposed to do? Those are the kinds of things that bicyclists have to face in this city. And it requires somebody with more like the experience of one of the previous speakers who says that he's been riding in, you know, for PedEx professionally. Additionally, there's $47,000 for a laptop, a motorcycle, travel expenses, and a radar unit. We have an extra computer at the hub that we can give them. With that money, we could staff a permanent pedestrians and cyclist safety office at the hub, as well as another satellite office somewhere on the east side. I don't have any problem with us spending a lot of money on cyclist and pedestrian safety. I think that's it's a really great thing for us to do. I just think this is 40 times what People Power has spent over the past 10 years. And although we haven't done everything that we could have, we've done a lot in those 10 years, and with something like this, we could actually do amazing amount more. So I ask you to consider very seriously this issue. Oh, one last thing. Perhaps maybe we could apply for this kind of grant money and have a task force that actually involved the different community cycling groups to figure out how we could best spend $500,000, and we might come up with something more interesting. Thanks.
Okay, next speaker, please.
Council members Robert Norris and Stop Police Abuse Now. We're an organization that has received complaints over the years problems that bicyclists have had with the police. Indeed, on Friday, I received a report of a sergeant essentially manhandling a woman on a bike, taking her into custody for driving the wrong way on Pacific Avenue in a custodial arrest, a highly unusual thing involving Sergeant Baker, which I'm looking into. But I think that you've already seen that there's a lot of testimony that there is some concern about the relationship between the police department and bicyclists in this town, and some need for better training and, more important, better involvement. More involvement of bicycle groups. Indeed, I mean, the previous speaker has made the case more eloquently than I ever could. Why is it coming so late, 31st of January? Suddenly you're being put on the spot to do something immediately. And again, it was my understanding, as another speaker said, that you had decided you don't want the police department coming to you with dangling these baits of federal grants that in 2 years you're going to have to pay for down the road. That requires certainly some reflection. The figures show, if you look at this particular grant, $327,500 for equipment and personnel and $165,000 for the educational component. That's twice as much for enforcement as for education. You've already heard some concerns about the educational process. I have a particular concern. Yes, but 2 days ago, as a reporter for Free Radio Santa Cruz, I ran into the driver who rammed into Sean. I interviewed him and other people. We put that on the air on Free Radio Santa Cruz. And there was great concern in the group of people that I interviewed that the police were both tardy and sort of disinterested in taking accounts from the victims. Rather, they seemed to be not terribly concerned and involved based on the testimony that I received. So I think you need to give the bicycling community, the pedestrian community, the community generally, an opportunity to have some input into this before you make a decision. I don't think it's the end of the world if this grant deadline goes by. I think that it's not. There are other opportunities to do this, and I think it needs to be done in a thoughtful fashion after a measured response. Rubber stamping police appropriations has been an unfortunate trait of past city councils, and I'm just hoping that this won't be another case of that. You see, the community is pretty clearly opposed to doing this right now, and I would hope that you would respect the voice of the community on this issue. Thank you.
Next speaker, please.
Hello, my name is Bill Levon. I'm with the Hub for Sustainable Transportation, and I just want to make a simple comment. I think that the majority of this funding should go towards education and not enforcement. Thanks.
Thank you. Next speaker, please. That seems to be all the speakers, so I will call it back to the council. Are there any other comments the council members want to make? Questions, comments, or motion?
I have a question for Chief Belcher. I'll start asking while you're walking up. It just seemed from the public testimony and from the outline of the proposal that you made that conceivably there could be a couple of other components. For example, I was thinking publicity so that motor vehicle drivers knew that we were focusing on motor vehicle operators who violate bicycles right-of-way, and enforcement. And I can think of a very good example right in front of Santa Cruz High. There's a very dramatic turn just slightly to the south that almost all motor vehicles drive through that bike lane. There's another one right on the brand new trestle bridge the same way. And it seems to me that we could put some ads in the Santa Cruz Sentinel and say we're going to do this and then really direct some of this enforcement in a serious way so that the one piece of education that maybe hasn't been contemplated up until now is alerting the motor vehicle public that we're going to focus on bicycle safety by stopping these violations of right-of-way by motor vehicles into the bike paths. And so might that be a possible component of this grant? Would you be amenable to including components like that at this late date?
Certainly. Actually, that is part of the grant, and it's part of the requirements of the grant that we do a significant media campaign to inform the entire public, pedestrians, bicyclists, and motorists of the efforts underway. And actually, one of the first objectives is to conduct a press conference or other media event by November 30th to kick off and publicize the exit grant, develop, produce, distribute educational materials for the entire project. That includes the motoring public. We worked with the Sentinel, as you know, in the last grant that we had very successfully. We worked with...
And rather than listen to the endless drone of the police chief and the helpful questions of Ed Porter, who apparently didn't have enough backbone to vote down this or even oppose directly this police review, this police, well, this additional funding for cops to police bikes is what it boils down to. It's kind of sad to listen to, but there it is. That was an item on the afternoon agenda on Tuesday. Another cause for concern, which I'm now going to play for you, was the... an item that came up a little earlier on the agenda. It was on the consent agenda, just as this was on the... Actually, no, I think this grant was not on the consent agenda. This grant was, I believe, on the administrative agenda. Yeah, it was actually going to be discussed. Consent agenda items will not be discussed unless they are pulled from the agenda. So at least they had the... well, they pulled it out. They had it on a separate agenda so that it should be discussable. Consent agenda items can be discussed if they're pulled off. I pulled this item off. The item that I pulled off is called Police Facility Budget Appropriation, transferred $111,587 to fund out-of-contract work items at the new police facility. There's actually a typo here. It says at the new policy facility, but since police are policy, it's quite true. Their policy is police. That's the city council's policy. Here's my comments on that. And the interesting gobbledygook that followed from the city council and the city manager in response to a relatively straightforward question, how much is the police overrun? Here we go.
Item 18, Mr. Norris.
Thank you, Mayor. Ms. Morris. This is the appropriation of police facility funds, essentially adding $111,000 to the $12.3 million that has currently been expended. My concern is that for the ordinary citizen, it's really hard to come to any judgment as to whether too much money is being spent. And we already, one of the warning signals I find is that nowhere in this appropriation is there an indication that there's a $5 million cost overrun already from the original $6 or $7 million this was supposed to cost. So the public and the council is not being, you know, flagged to say, hey, why this particular appropriation at this time? You know, is it going to run into the same kind of problems that the previous appropriations have run into? It's difficult for me as a layman to understand specifically, for example, how this money might otherwise be sent. It comes from the general capital improvement program funds, so I suppose it could go to capital improvements in some other venue. I'm particularly concerned, of course, with homeless issues and would like to see shelter getting that kind of money. I don't know if it's appropriate to transfer it. But I do know that what we need here is public hearings when there is an overrun of more than, I don't know, 25% or $1 million. I mean, you have a situation where we've had a huge overrun in the police department and no significant oversight in terms of meaningful public input and a specific process set up for that purpose. And I think that is really an important thing to have in this situation, both for the, you know, the reliability of, to, in essence, buttress the police department's legitimate reputation, and to deal with the concerns, such as were expressed early on, about non-union contractors, and defects and problems with the windows and everything that came up in the past. There were legitimate concerns raised, but I got the feeling, I mean, I don't know if the public, I certainly don't, has any confidence that these issues have been addressed in a regular and systematic way, so that there's actually some assurance that in the future, this particular appropriation, for example, is free of the problems that would cause another $100,000 or another $1 million required to be appropriated on this issue. I don't know. I leave it in your hands. I know that that you have the staff to help you with this. I would recommend getting a staff report more specifically or perhaps working on a process as to how you could deal with future overruns in a more systematic and public manner. Thank you.
I will respond as well as I can because I've tried to pay attention to this item and I don't want the public to be misled. There were certain items in the police facility that were not bid and were not brought into construction. For instance, the venting of the underside of the police building, hoping that it wouldn't build up moisture, hoping that we wouldn't be required to make certain improvements, hoping that we would end up saving that money. We did not save that money. We would probably see ourselves, see the building suffer if we did not vent the lower portion of the building. That's the lion's share of what's being costed into this particular proposal. That's my understanding. If there's anybody with any other understanding or any other concerns of council members, I'd certainly be glad to hear them.
I just wanted to clarify one item regarding the budget appropriation that's being requested. The amount of funds that are being requested are not above and beyond what council has previously authorized for this project. So
we just tried not to spend them.
Right, exactly. I just want to make that clear so that appropriating these additional funds is not taking away from any current CIP project because it's been set aside for this purpose. We had hoped not to spend it. And actually, we will be getting some reimbursed. We've already gotten back approximately $37,000 from the contractor for the mitigation expenses, and we hope to get more of that back. So it'll be offset somewhat by those reimbursements as well.
The public's well aware we have problems with the contractor and with the installation of windows and other features of that building. We are pursuing remedies with that contractor. We're paying for the tests and various other things that were associated with fixing those features of that building. Mr. Crone.
Martin, I was wondering, the previous speaker said we're building $5 million over budget. Any veracity to that statement?
No, that's not correct. And I mean, the city manager has a little bit more history.
I could go back and look at the exact numbers, but I think the comment is mixing up construction costs with the total package. We can go back and look at some original estimates. We've used several consultants, including a local construction manager, and what they've all told me is that most owners would not have either discovered or remedied all of the issues that we both discovered and remedied in the course of this project, that most owners would have 10 years from now or 15 years from now, found leaks, repaired them one at a time, that most donors would never have been as aggressive as we have done. So I think, at least not, it's not my opinion, the opinion of all of the people that we've brought in to assist us with this, is that we've served the taxpayers well, because we have insisted on the contractors and the subcontractors fixing the problems early on. So we can, and I also understood from the architect that the per square foot total was the least of any public or any police department built in California in recent years. We can ask them to put some data together. Certainly in terms of overall, our experience was very consistent with what people are experiencing with buildings of this size.
And one additional piece of information. Council will recall that a notice of completion, that Council authorized the filing of a notice of completion recently, and the contract for the contractor for constructing the building was within the contracted budget. So.
Well, I've never had a project go over budget, but I understand that it does happen. I'd like to move this item.
Moved and seconded. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? It's unanimous. Item number 19.
And that, of course, and my apologies for background noises on that. I think one of the mics was left open inadvertently. That was that. There was no answer to the question, Crone's question, is it true that there was this amount of budget overrun? The city manager, Dick Wilson, said, oh, of course not, that's not true. Assistant city manager, Martine Bernal, oh, no, that's not true. But nobody ever gave the figures as to how much the overrun actually was. You heard them kind of blathering around about it, but not getting anywhere, and worse, no council member demanding a straight answer, which, of course, has been the problem with the council for the last 2 years for those who've had hopes for Crone, Fitzmaurice, and Sugar, that they would pursue things at least to the sticking point. And sometimes, actually, that has happened, and they've suffered losses, like Sugar tried to suspend the sleeping ban over the winter of 1998-99, saying only enforce law other laws, but not the sleeping ban. If there's other problem, like littering, urinating, defecating, disturbing the peace, trespass, you go after that, but you don't arrest someone simply for sleeping. And he pushed that one as far as he could. He actually tried to get an emergency ordinance in place on it, and I respected him for that, although it was sad that he didn't want to spend enough time with us beforehand to actually work out what needed to be done to effectively do that. And he tried, but they have stopped trying. That's the problem. Here you see an example of the city manager running away with a non-answer, and of course that's perfectly okay. And that happened a lot. That's happened endlessly with the Dolphin Lee project, which we're going to turn to shortly. Dolphin Lee project is the two apartment buildings down on in the beach area, which are being, well, one of them has already been essentially given to Mercy Charities Housing for its low-income housing project, which unfortunately does not guarantee that the people currently living there will be able to return to it or get some equivalent housing. Instead, it's going to produce housing for a lesser number of people and drive away some of the people currently living there. This, of course, has not been honestly faced up front. Had it been, we might have had more respect for the people who'd put forward this project. Instead, they've just rammed it ahead in secret session. It's actually a secret session because we can't hear it, so it's secret. They like to use the word closed. How nice. In fact, since it's secret from the community, I regard it as a secret session. We know it's happening, but we don't know what the hell is going on behind those closed doors. Anyway, these doors are open. At least the phone line is at 427-3772, Free Radio Santa Cruz. Give me a call, and I will put you on the air. I know we had a caller about, I guess it was last show, who talked about his horror at seeing a woman attacked by Sergeant Baker downtown in the terms of an arrest, what he regarded as a form of physical abuse, for a bicyclist going the wrong way. A woman named Jen Curry, by the account I got from the witnesses, though I've never been able to speak to Ms. Curry herself. Baker denies all this, of course, but doesn't give any details, and we're not likely to find out any, I think, from his neck of the woods, since the police department doesn't usually provide those details. It's all personnel matters, don't you know. But this one of these witnesses is going to call in with his own story. Apparently he's being harassed himself by police, and recently he was jailed, and he's going to perhaps talk about that story on the air, and he's invited to call in and discuss that if and when he would like to do that. And we do have about 25 minutes left before the end of the show. There's also a conference happening tomorrow up in Oakland that I'm off to. It's 10 to 3 in the afternoon, January 26th, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at 685 14th Street in Oakland, California. It's called the California Homeless Civil Rights Organizing Project. Across the country, this is what the flyer says, homeless people are being criminalized simply for being poor. Public space is restricted and relentlessly privatized, while those who are homeless are cited, jailed, and abused. Services continue to be cut, and affordable housing is impossible to find. Are you interested in fighting this injustice? Come to the very first work group meeting of the California Homeless Civil Rights Organizing Project. KUCHTROP. That's the acronym. Homeless people, activists, and civil rights attorneys from all over the state of California will meet and begin the process of organizing to stop civil rights abuses of homeless people on a statewide level. Gathering the input of homeless people on local levels across California, the work group will utilize that information to prioritize the advocacy agenda for this critically needed organization. Everyone is needed and invited. Your participation will make a difference. January 26th, Friday, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., 685 14th Street, Oakland, California. And I might be able to find a place in the car if somebody wants to come up. You got to call me at 423-HUFF-FAST. And there isn't any charge to this, but you got to bring your own lunch, and you probably have to split the gas somewhat. Not a lot, but a bit. So that's happening tomorrow. I'll probably be leaving around 8. So you got to get up early in the morning. And I'll be talking about this issue, or at the outcome of this conference, on Sunday, and telling you all what happened, as far as I could find out. And you are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. And this is your host, Bathrobs Pierre Robert Norris. What is our...